I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
I think the experience of being hired by a client to reenact the Revolutionary War was really interesting.
I'm diking out, you're diking out. Let's dike out together. See what it's all about.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast that puts the D in BDSM. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're diking out with writer, sex worker, activist, and BDSM practitioner Yin Q.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So happy to have you here. Before we get into things, a few quick announcements. I am reviving my Loves a Pitch show for Pride. It's going to be at Come On Everybody on June 23rd, and I'm taking applications right now through, I think, June 11th. So if you think you could be crowned Pride's hottest catch, please apply to be a contestant on this show, or you can just come and watch. We're going to have a fun panel. There's going to be a hot performance by burlesque babe Ruby Quinn, and it's going to be a great time. Melody, you're going to be traveling and doing something for Pride.
Yes. My lover Allie and I will be doing a weekend at the Comedy Bar in Chicago. Chicago listeners, Midwest listeners, if you're in the area, definitely come to one of those shows. It's going to be two shows on Friday night, two on Saturday. And Allie's headlining. I'm featuring for her.
Because you're supportive.
Yes.
You're supporting her. You're
literally
a supportive partner. Love to hear it. I did forget to mention that Love's a Pitch. It is sponsored by our friends at Maker's Mark. Always a great ally for us in the shows. Pride Month and beyond. Speaking of beyond Pride Month, Maker's Mark is also going to be sponsoring a party that we're putting on. That's right. It's not a comedy show. Melody and I...
we're just going to have fun. Should we? I can't.
Yeah,
how do we explain this?
Okay.
It's a Lilith Fair
karaoke party. Lilith Fair Karaoke at Good Judy, July 2nd. Save the date. If you're feeling the blues post-Pride, we are going to do it up. It's going to be a theme party. We want you to dress as if you're going to Lilith Fair, as if you're a Lilith Fair artist. We're going to have karaoke upstairs. Lilith Fair songs only.
Only.
Maybe. I don't know.
No, you can do whatever you want. Highly encouraged.
Yeah, highly encouraged if you don't want to be heckled or booed. It's going to be so much fun. Thank you to Maker's Mark for keeping the party going past June. One last thing. We put out extra episodes every week on our Patreon, patreon.com/dykingout. That's what keeps the podcast going every week, is the support of listeners like you. If you're not a patron yet, please check it out. You can also get ad-free episodes, tickets to our shows, all sorts of great things. So patreon.com/dykingout. Okay, that was a lot in terms of announcements. Yin, thank you for, suffering through that. But like, don't those sound like fun things to do? Would you go?
Absolutely. I'm impressed also all right. by how much information you got into that short period of time. Karaoke sounds fantastic. I'll be there.
You should come. Yes. We're hoping that a lot of past guests come. We're going to try to get a musical performance, perhaps by somebody who performed at Lilith Fair, TBD, but you know we have those contacts. All right. Let's get into it.
Gayest thing time, Carolyn.
Yep.
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
Gayest thing I did this week? Well, on Memorial Gay, which was yesterday, so we are recording the day after Memorial Day, I went to get my bikini line waxed, something I normally don't do, but I am going to Girls in Wonderland this week in Orlando, as you all know. So I guess by the time this comes out, I will have been Wonderlanded fully and recovering. But anyway, I'm there, and the waxologist was making conversation, asked if I was there getting waxed for any particular reason, if I had any plans. And I said, well, I'm going to Orlando, I'm going to like this 4-day circuit party, but I didn't specify anything. And she just kind of turned and gives me this look, and she says, I think I know what you're talking about. And I'm like, do you? And she's like, I think so. I said, Girls in Wonderland? And she's like, yes. So now I know that the person waxing me is queer and awesome. And she has to move apartments, though. So she decided not to go, that it would be too much. And as I'm there, naked from the waist down with my legs like butterflied out, I'm like, do I tell her about the podcast? I'm like, is it appropriate to be plugging my podcast? Do I tell her about the Stonewall show tonight? It is sold out, but she seems pretty cool. I don't know. And I decided against it. And now I regret it. I'm like, I think, it's her job. I shouldn't overthink it. She sees, genitalia all day. That's her job. So
I thought you were going to ask her out on a date.
No, that would be inappropriate.
Like, if you like what you see, my wife and I are open.
We didn't get that far. But, if you're listening, you know who you are. I'm not going to say your name. I did say it on stage at Stonewall last night while telling this story. Part of me was also like, do they already listen? Do they already know? And then they know who's vagina they're waxing right now, and that's okay. I'm okay with that, because she did a great job. So that's the gayest thing I did this week, was talk about Girls in Wonderland with my vagina out. Melody, what about you? What's the gayest thing you did this week?
I gotta go with our Stonewall show last night, hosting that. Of course, you were there too, but yeah. My gayest thing was, after an incredible show of just dynamite performances, it was probably our best show
I think,
like,
so.
Ever.
So fun.
We had Alana Glazer on the show, a personal hero of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Within minutes after her set, we are backstage, and Allie and I are showing her videos of Allie's niece that we're trying to radicalize, who's coming out here from North Carolina, has a very gung-ho Trump mom, very, very Fox News house. And so we're going to take her to Wicked. We're going to take her down Christopher Street when she's here. She's 13. But when she realized we were together, because I was supposed to be a buddy That's what we had to call each other.
Right.
Her brother and this woman are now divorced, but it was her rule. We weren't allowed to reveal that we were together. And she is, kids are smart. She figured it out and she communicated it through song. And I think we've played the song on the podcast before.
Yes.
Yes. Allie, Melody, they're together forever. Nothing could stop them. Within minutes after Alana finishes her incredible headlining set, we are showing them our video.
Right.
Gay on energy.
Love that. That's very gay. Also, I think we should say, breaking news. For the first time on stage, Alana talked about coming out as non-binary.
Yes.
So they, she pronouns. And that was really cool to witness.
What an
because
honor.
When they started talking about that, that was the first that I'd heard of it. And afterwards, they were telling us that that was the first time they were talking about it. So probably more to come there. And we think that she'll do the show again.
I think they already said they want to do the show. So stay tuned.
I'm trying to use they and she 50-50. Is that the deal? If someone's they, she half the time, do she half the time do they?
I use both they and she. And I feel like it's just... like use they when, you know, whenever, but for me, like if you're using she as well, that's fantastic and fine.
Great. Yeah. Well, you heard it here. That's the official way to handle it for everybody, every case, everyone's the same. All right. Well, now it's your turn in the hot seat. Ian, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
I think it was a lot less thrilling, but I do have to say, I paused for a moment when I was ordering probiotics for my cat. And I just thought, this is really queer.
Yes. And,
but I was doing that while also creating an agenda for this coming International Whores Day, which is in 2 days on June 2nd on Thursday. And I'm working with Red Canary Song, which is an organization that I organize with, as well as Kink Out Events, which is another organization that I work with. And we are creating, you know, the mission, vision, values for Red Canary Song for that day. That is like an annual meeting that we do, where we meet with sex working organizations throughout Asia, people from Hong Kong, Thailand, Korea, Taiwan, India. And so, but amongst that, you know, top of our list is to go to Nowadays for the Glitz and Body Hack Party. That's going to be, so it's basically like
nice
work, but let's get ready and go out and put glitter on, go and dance. So that's probably the gayest thing that's coming up in a couple of days.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know about National Whores Day or else I would have planned something. Well, I guess I'm going to be having it in my own way in Girls in Wonderland,
sure,
right?
Are.
Yeah. no. But seriously, we're so glad you're here to talk about a lot of the things within what you mentioned, because, you know, before, it feels like so long ago, we used to have a topic for each episode, and I'm like, we've never done a kink episode. And I famously opened up my marriage last fall, and since then have been you know, just like exploring a lot of things, meeting a lot of people, and the kink community is something I haven't even dipped my toes in yet, but it just seems like this fascinating world, and I just want to know more. I need more information. So where do we start?
Yeah, where do we start? Where did you start?
Yes. Tell us about your journey.
Sure. My kink journey, I think I started as soon as I learned how to kiss, really. you know, the beginning of, for me, just as sexual awakening was happening, like I was not thinking about like romantic, soft, you know, holding hands and kissing, or I was, but it like included holding like someone at the throat and slapping or getting slapped at the same time. So it definitely came from like this inner feeling like I wanted to wrestle somebody down or be held down. And, you know, so you know, skip a few years later so that I can find consent and the rules of BDSM, it became a lot more sane. And I really learned the sort of like the leather protocols and not only the protocols, but also the way of the leather community, queer leather community.
Let's talk about the queer leather community, because I guess that's the extent people are like, oh, leather. And I get like wearing leather, but like what's all involved? What's actually considered the leather community? What's at play?
Yeah. Every time I go to say a dyke march or something, you see a lot of dykes in leather harnesses. I've never explored why.
And what's the extent of it?
Yeah.
Sure. So, I mean, it's based on, of course, you know, the inner desires of sadomasochism and dominance, submission, role plays. So, but the community coming together is really like about any community, you know, it's like about finding each other, finding consent and finding just visibility with one another. And we have to also remember the history of how the leather community came together was from, you know, gay men being able to signal each other, especially through motorcycle clubs and the leather that they were wearing, and then really coming together more formally during the AIDS crisis and creating pageants and community meetings so that people could give back to each other, people could like look after one another, and that mutual aid could be dispersed throughout the community. So I feel like there's been a progression since then, but we want to always remember where our roots came from, of like how we how we had to stick together to stay safe, how we had to signal. And so I think that like within the dyke community now, there are some traditions that have stayed with us, with like boot blacking, love for leather, love for service. And when I say serve, it's not just about submissives doing service, but tops also doing education, taking other, you know, taking people on to teach, and kind of like schooling people on the ways of like how to do things in a way that's healthy and sane and, you know, that makes sense. So people don't get abused or hurt for bad, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, one question I have, because I'm on the app field and there are a lot of people looking for different kind of kink stuff there. And a lot of people who aren't experienced are looking for somebody who's more experienced. And then a lot of people who are experienced are like, I'm not here to teach you. And like, if somebody's inexperienced, like what is the best way for them to go about finding someone who can show them the ropes? Is it hiring someone? Is it going to like a party or an event? Where do you start?
I think all of those, all of the above, but Lesbian Sex Mafia is one of the oldest leather, you know, organizations throughout the country, and they are still going strong in New York City. And it's a fantastic space and they usually meet at the center right in the village. So, and it's monthly meetings. So you can go there, meet people, take classes. They have great educators that come through. So you can meet people to explore with, but also to ask questions. Workshops are happening all over the place through LSM, as well as different, you know, there's a lot of different stores that have it, whether it's Purple Passion in New York City. There's also a Pleasure Chest on the Upper East Side that has great classes, as well as New Women's Space. There's a lot of great queer classes, you know, and great educators all throughout the city.
Oh, I didn't know that they did stuff like that at New Women's Space.
I was just going to say, we love New Women's Space.
I need to
have no idea.
Pay more attention to the emails. One word that keeps coming up a lot is consent. I know, like, especially during like Me Too and all of that, and people were talking about consent more. And I kept hearing so much about like how like look no further than the BDSM community for like the how to on consent and enthusiastic consent.
Sure. Because so for consent for us, it's not about just saying yes one time, right? You have to say yes so many more times. And also you really have to sit down and I tell people to like do their homework for themselves of actually writing down what they're interested in exploring, so they understand all of the different topics within like within BDSM that you'd be consenting to or not consenting to. And that's like a negotiation that has to happen, because when somebody says that yes to, let's say, going into rope bondage, which can be done in very different ways, whether it can be done in like a very meditative way that feels like a yoga experience almost, or it can go into a highly erotically charged experience, or it can go into a like a mindfuck experience of captive role play. So you really have to understand what you're looking for and be able to communicate those things to your partner. And your partner has to also be able to communicate back what they will and won't do. Instead of just saying like, oh yes, you're going to go into bondage, you also have to say like, what are the activities that you're interested in getting into? Because once you're in a submissive space of being in bondage, the mind can go elsewhere. You know, you can definitely get into role play of like where struggling up against the bondage can feel really good. Saying no can really be really safe, you know, be really fun for a role play. So being able to have the parameters really clearly outlined before you go in, whether you want flogging, whether you want fisting, whether you want tickling, which, you know, that's my hard no, is like the tickling. Like,
is the tickling too far?
Is fantastic, yeah. But tickling, no, you're not allowed to tickle me. I will probably puke on you. You know, so there's it's about not just like saying yes once, but also getting into like every single detail. And this gives you the chance to really, you know, poke around to all the different fantasies that you have. And it's not that it doesn't leave things wide open, because there are many things that can still be out in the open that you're not sure if you want to delve into or not. But the ideas of like what you're really, really interested in, and then also what your hard boundaries are formed.
It seems so complex when you're starting out and trying to find a sex party to go to. And I was wondering if you have any like newbie mistakes or red flags people should look out for when they're trying to wade into these spaces.
Well, you were speaking just before about being online and noticing that a lot of people who are with experience don't necessarily want to be play, you know, be teaching others. I would say if you're going in as a newbie, to really keep an eye on the person who is always looking for the newbies, you know, that's usually my first. And that's probably like, you know, a good warning for any kind of sex party, not just kink sex party, but you want to make sure that you're playing with somebody who has a really good reputation. I would say like as a newbie, go in first with friends and do platonic spanking, you know, do a little bit of play and like get to know who people are throughout the scene before you dive in and let yourself be cuffed and taken away by somebody that seems really, you know, hot and ready for you.
Right.
I said newbie, but I was curious if there are terms like that, like in the gay community, we have like baby gay, pillow prince, like are there kink specific?
Wow. You're bringing up two triggering terms off the bat.
Well, we've to look out for or
what's the lingo for like a somebody that's new to kink?
I think it is newbie still.
Newbie, cool. All right.
But
because I was like, kink is so cool, and I used newbie. That didn't okay. I'm just checking.
I mean, when I was getting into being a top, like I would call myself like a baby top or, you know, or baby bottom. Like, so it's really, I mean, not necessarily saying this is an age play thing.
Gotcha.
So if you're not, you know, haven't immersed yourself in the kink scene yet, you know, what is it that you see that is like really fascinating and yet may not like maybe too scary for you to dip your toe of why you haven't dipped your toe in just yet?
So for me personally, I mean, there's a couple things. One for me, when people are like, you know, what are your fantasies or like, what are you into? I'm just like, I don't know, good sex. Like, I don't have any that I'm aware of yet. So I'm like still on this discovery at this point, I guess, in my life, because I was always like a serial monogamist and had like, you know, when you're partnered for a while, and this isn't true for everyone, but for me in past relationships, it was just kind of like figuring out the other person's code. And when we have sex, we know which buttons to press, you know, to orgasm and then we're good to go. And then it wasn't until I met my wife now, where when we first got together, we started having a lot more like playful sex and like experimenting a little more than like I had ever had before. And then, but just like never continued too far, I guess, into that journey, I guess, because we were both inexperienced. So we didn't know where to go. And I like, there has been interest from people and having me dominate. And in my mind, like thinking, I just feel like, oh, I'm so vulnerable right now. I'm just like, what do I say? Like thinking of the things that I'm like supposed to say and supposed to do and do it with confidence. Like, yes, I feel like I am a top, but, I mean, I switch, but like, I'm happy to do that. And I want to do that. But part of me is like, what if I say something and it's like humiliating, or I don't sell it, or, you know, I just don't want to feel like foolish. I want to feel hot, you know?
Yeah. I think that like, you know, yeah, definitely practicing helps in terms of like how to give deliveries. And this is like where it can be really fun too, of say, because we have to take like, look at like any kind of activity that we would say is a dominant or submissive activity. And really it's just all about the intention, right? If you were to, let's say even just like cook a meal, right? It could be some from a, like a submissive point of view where you're cooking a meal, like a perfect meal for your dominant, and it has to be perfect. And then there's like role play involved of like whether it is perfect and how it's served. But at the same time, you can do the same thing in a romantic way as a dominant, where you are creating the food and you are, you are making something that your submissive has to eat, you know? So there's like just different ways of actually taking a look at any kind of activity that could be on the plate that you think is really fun, and then switching it to either you're a top or a bottom on that activity. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I think we're overthinking it.
I think I'm definitely overthinking it. And like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, Cecilia and I already are kind of doing these things. Like, we can get very playful in that way, but I guess because there's like no like formal education behind it or instruction, and we're just kind of like feeling it out together, and it's fun and we have a good time. But that's maybe it's the overthinking that keeps us from going forward. But I know like there is some stuff like that I'm like, maybe I could be into it, but I just don't understand it. So I'll, you know, be swiping on Field, and there's a lot of like Shibari pictures and stuff. I'm like, well, that looks cool, but what? Like, what do you do? Like you just get tied up? Is someone doing things to you while you're tied up? Or is it just like the sensation of being tied up? Or what's going on? What's happening?
Yeah. Well, rope bondage is like, you're going to see a lot of like really complicated, images online, and it's not necessarily for the erotic field. It's more like a circus performance, right? I mean, it's beautiful, right? And I do it and I love it too, but it's like, you're putting somebody into a Cirque du Soleil, act rather than actually going into heavy sex. So both can happen. Most of the ties that you need to learn for just, you know, for some good sex are really, really simple. And that can be like, you can go to like an intro class at any of the spaces that I had recommended before to find out how. But then like the reason why, I mean, it's the push and pull, right? It's the push and pull is for the submissive to be able to let go of control. Sensations that can happen where they don't have to feel like they have to reciprocate necessarily. And as a top, it's really about like, then you get to do whatever you want to this person whom you find really hot and attractive to, right? And so my biggest tip for all tops starting off is the blindfold. Okay. The blindfold is so essential because it allows the bottom to really sink into what we call subspace, you know, to let go of control. Mm. They're not clocking you. They're not like making sure everything's okay with you. And then as a top, you get to make mistakes. And you get to look around and just be like, what am I going to use next? What do I want to do? Do I want to break out the ice? Do I want to break out the candles? Do I want to
just kind of pace around?
Yeah, can pace around. You can like tie a knot and untie it, make, you know, and so it's really
stretch
about you being able to just, yeah, stretch into, exactly, stretch into your own.
I love that. That is,
yeah, that's
an amazing tip. Yeah.
Once again, I'm like realizing how much I've been overthinking this.
Right.
Or also thinking like I'm in a monogamous relationship and just assuming that this world isn't for me because I just associate it with a lot of people who are very open, literally open in their relationships, poly. But do you have any advice for couples who are both interested, maybe one's more interested in the other? Okay. and how to navigate that?
Yeah, I think that kink is essential for long-term relationships for myself. And I really have seen it too, in terms of like, it brings about this charge that can happen between the two people without necessarily having like, for example, if you have a long-term relationship where you're at distance from each other, you can give each other assignments, right? Of like things to do, how to work, how to earn orgasms, how to send each other photos, what you want to see the other person wearing, et cetera. And it really keeps the charge also when you're going through life changes that like, and I'm just thinking, you know, I have two kids, so like babies, hormones, I'm in perimenopause now. So it's like those kinds of things like have still kept it going, because as my body has changed from, you know, wanting it all the time to like, you know, I can sit here with a cup of tea and tie you up, but not, I'm not necessarily full body into this right now. It's more, I'm full mind into this. So I always tell people, you know, even when my kinky, even when my body doesn't feel kinky, my brain always does, because it can be like, the great thing about kink is that you can just constantly find a storyline, you know? So if you're a storyteller, if you're like, love to be creative with things, if you like to do projects, then this is for you, you know? It's really like, you get to choose like, okay, how am I going to like make you into my next project? Like, what are we going to do to you?
Yeah.
You know?
I love that. Yeah. We always talk about how lesbian culture, there's stereotypes of us being very crafty and knitting, but I think that's the crafts, arts and crafts I want to get into.
Oh, all right.
That sounds fun.
What are some common misconceptions about kink and people who are into kink?
Well, there is the misconception that we're all poly. I mean, I happen to be.
My bad.
But there's a lot of people who are monogamous in the scene. Also think that like there are ways of playing with kink that are very platonically done, which are erotically charged, but aren't necessarily like fully consummated sex, like genital sex. So that when I consider myself poly, it's that I play with other people, I'll put them into rope, but I might not necessarily go and have sex with them. I probably won't actually at this stage, you know? And so there, so understanding that kink can be as erotic as like flamenco dancing, right? With somebody where you're like dancing incredibly intimately with somebody, but you don't quite, you know, have the sex, or you don't quite kiss, or whatever it is, that whatever boundaries that are like within your play. So it is not necessarily about a whole bunch of swingers just, you know, jumping into the mattress together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that either. You know, mattresses in a sex club, mattresses is just fine too.
Yeah. I went to last summer a barbecue at a lesbian's house. And so it was just a mostly lesbian group, but someone showed up with the ropes, and then suddenly, casually, everyone started tying each other up. And
casually,
it was like, yeah, no one was having like genital sex, obviously, out in their backyard, but it was just happening so naturally, and everyone was having fun. But there was a group of straights in the corner, so uncomfortable. And I was like, oh, do we need to ask them for consent for doing this sort of
in front of
at
them?
Yeah.
It's like we're a knitting circle where we're knitting each other.
Yeah, right.
The blankets. Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Yeah, I mean, I know of people who have been to sex parties and definitely do not have sex, whether they're just there to meet people or engage in like a little bit of playful spanking and things like that, but not having sex. And that's definitely not always like the expectation. So I think that. Yeah, a lot of these things can seem maybe like very overwhelming, and that if you're going to do it, like you have to go to this like extreme place or something like that, when it's really all about like whatever you're comfortable with, right?
Absolutely.
Talk about some of the organizing you do with Asian migrant massage workers.
Sure. That would be Reichenary Song. So I organize with collective where we are made up of Asian American sex workers and Asian migrant massage workers. And the reason why these two sort of groups have come together as body care workers who are organizing together is because, you know, when we think of Asian massage parlors, so many people immediately assume that they're erotic spaces. You know, the spaces that sex work is being done, and whether or not they're being done there, they're targeted as such, as we've seen through the past year's tragedies of shootings in Atlanta, as well as police raids that are constantly happening and throughout the city and still are still going on throughout our country in the name of like anti-trafficking work. But they're targeting these spaces, assuming that there's sex work happening. And so we are coming together as allies to really fight this, you know, carceral system that is constantly against the most vulnerable people within the Asian communities, which are Asian migrant, usually women, massage workers, and fighting for decriminalization of sex work, full decriminalization, trying to educate people on understanding like how this will affect how this will affect the police raids that are happening also in massage parlors as well.
I definitely go into those spaces not assuming that there's sex work happening.
Yeah.
But then I always wonder, like, but I'm like, how do people know? Like, is it just that some places have like a whisper network that like, oh, this is the place you go for that? Because when I'm just on Yelp looking for a place to get a massage, I'm like,
there's no button on Yelp to kind of narrow your search in that way.
No, there are other online resources available for people who are specifically seeking out erotic massage work, let's say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that there's a lot of people who go into these spaces, and mostly I will say like cis men, right, are going into these spaces and assuming that there's erotic services happening there.
Right, right. Ah, man, what a complicated world. I don't know. When I think about like, there's just so much, so many layers to what those workers must be dealing with, from just like a legal front, a harassment front, harassment from both clientele and police and law, you know, all of that.
And it's beyond harassment. I mean, the violence that happens all the time. I mean, we're constantly losing comrades, not only on the massage spas, but also sex workers altogether are caught between the police raids, the internet shutting us down, shutting down businesses.
Right.
And then clientele using that or weaponizing that against us to, you know, to treat us badly, treat us poorly, as well as, you know, much, much worse. So that's why the organizing has to be like really strong, and we have to stand together to be able to combat this.
How can we help? How can our listeners help be supportive of these communities of sex workers? I know that in some states there are certain bills and laws that they can vote for or against, and being educated about that. But what else can be done?
Yeah, besides, you know, actually voting on the laws of like we're campaigning right now to decriminalize unlicensed massage work. There are numerous of other things, like how we look at how we interact with people on a day-to-day basis and what comes out of our mouths and like what kind of media we consume, because everything, you know, if we think about like, where does this stigma against sex work come from? It comes from everything from media to our own slut shaming of each other. So understanding like how in like our queer communities, are we still slut shaming each other? How are we, our expectations of women still like constructed around whether they do sex for money or sex, you know, or how they interact with sex at all. And like those opinions and like how we affect them. And then, you know, also like what are the spaces in media that we choose to consume? And like, you know, if we have to hear more jokes about sex workers being killed or sex workers, you know, or just watching these things come up on media, that's affected, you know, that's affects how we can help the community.
Are there any good like documentary resources? I know you're working on a documentary currently.
Sure. Yes. So I'm working on a documentary called Fly in Power for Red Canary Song, to sort of to uplift the stories of several people within Red Canary Song's work. There's also this fantastic documentary that it's a mini documentary that it was just put out by Sex Workers Project called Sexual Healing. And that was produced by Max Scaff and Zola Royale. And that's about the, you know, how sex workers are healers, as not only healing themselves, but also how people, you know, healed each other and other clients. And I'm in that too.
Oh, hell yeah.
A little plug.
Yes.
I would also say, highly recommend the book Revolting Prostitutes by Juno Mack, who is also, you know, on TED Talk, that gives like a really great discourse on the political reasons why, and also the socioeconomic reasons why, we need to decriminalize sex work.
What are you seeing in terms of maybe the mainstreaming of kink? Things like choking now seems like something that's so... It feels like everyone's choking. Everyone's choking each other.
Everyone's choking each other.
Is that just me thinking that everyone's choking each other?
I've noticed more tweets, or just the way in which people talk about attraction lately seems to be getting kinkier.
Step on me,
some of the language I'm realizing is changing around just like, I find this person really attractive, seems to be borrowing a lot from kink, in my opinion. I don't know.
Okay. I'm not on Twitter, so I haven't been keeping up like that.
Bless.
But that said, I welcome anything to come from kink into the light, as long as it's done with the intention of really understanding the consent that needs to be done behind it, because otherwise we're just, flagrantly going into areas of abuse all over again,
Right.
So
right.
If somebody is putting out there that they want to do kink to somebody, I find that problematic. The fact that, I've seen leather work come into the mainstream many, many times. I've survived the era of the 50 Shades of Grey. So and that, of course, right, we saw was very much a non-consensual relationship of power dynamics that were also were abusive. So, as long as we can get better than that, then I'm good.
I was sort of thinking of the 50 Shades of it all, of people running with narratives that they shouldn't really be owning. And then that becomes the really popular thing. And then also, if something does become more mainstream, then is it considered less kinky?
No. I would say no because... because when you are actually being spanked, whether you've seen a lot of movies about people being spanked, then your body is going through that. If there's less stigma, less shame about being spanked or doing any kinky or sexual activity that you enjoy being done to you, whether it goes mainstream or not, you're processing it for yourself, So I don't think that it becomes any less thrilling. That's why sex still happens, right? Because we can see as much porn as we want, but when you're actually doing it, it's thrilling.
Yeah.
It doesn't take the edge off.
We don't want to kink shame anybody, but I really want to know, are there any kinks along the way that you've discovered or learned about where you're like, huh, that's interesting? Not shaming, yes. Just like, huh, would have never thought that was
surprising.
A thing. Yes, yeah. Sure.
Yes, I believe that there was, so as a baby dom working in a dungeon, a house dungeon where there's many women working together, which was a fantastic way to start because I've never been in a sorority. So I really feel like that was my sorority. It was a fantastic experience. And fully dyke on. I mean, I don't know how you can come out of a dungeon experience and not be a full-fledged dyke.
Love it.
I think the experience of being hired by a client to reenact the Revolutionary War was really interesting. And, there's several dominatrixes from the Bay Area who remember this guy. We would call him Revolutionary. Beep. I'm not going to say his name, but but it was, he would hire maybe 3 to 4 people, women for the afternoon for 2 to 3 hours. So it was good pay. He would bring these leotards, but they were full leotards. It's not like there was thong action. It was not a super revealing leotard, but full leotards that were either a red coat or you were a revolutionary. And he would, we would pretend to fire at each other, but just with our hands, no firearms were involved. No hurting was involved, but it was just like act after act, like every 10 minutes we would like restart. And he would not, you know, he would not get any business on. He was just thrilled to watch it. No, like, no touching himself, nothing else. He was just really excited to like watch us play games again and again.
Wow.
And we got paid well. So I'd have to say that that was the most interesting and yet like so not harmful, you know, like,
right.
Like he's not hurting anyone, you know, like literally yeah. not hurting anyone. And yeah, that was probably the best, paid afternoon.
I mean, of all the wars to reenact, that's probably one of the better ones.
Yeah, I was just going to say
yeah,
that.
There are way worse wars to reenact right. than the revolutionary.
Well, what's interesting too is that the Liberty people would actually be able to like overcome the Brits just by waving magic fingers. And that was, yeah.
See? All wars should be this way.
Absolutely.
This sounds way too wholesome.
Send up the troops in leotards.
Yes.
And magic finger to freedom.
Perfect.
Dang.
I think we solved world peace. Just, all right. Beautiful. We're doing the work. I imagine that more heteronormative kink spaces are very different than queer kink spaces. Can we talk about that?
Yes. It's been a long time since I've been in one. So I don't know if they've changed. Maybe they have. I think that the heteronormative kink spaces is the idea of, you know, even if a dom or a female is the dom, you see the person still relegated to a certain role of being a dom that has to wear a corset and has to be in heels and like the sort of the Venus and Furs idea of what it is to be a dom, that it is the male participant who's placing that female on a pedestal and giving that person the permission to be a top. I see, you know, and then also the other side of a male master and a female submissive, and this is not shaming. I think that like it can be done really well. I haven't really met a whole lot of people who do it well, but I know it must happen in a great way. Honestly, I mean, I've also seen that just be really not that interesting to me. That's all I'm going to say about that. Sorry.
Fair.
Yeah, I mean, I know some women and non-binary folks who do dominatrix work, and when they tell, you know, a lot of their like big money making things are like penis shaming, and a lot of like shaming and doing it over video and stuff. I'm like, are queer women asking to be shamed, or is that like something specific to cis men?
Yeah, I think that has to do with cis men. I have not had a lot of queer women look asking to be shamed. We go into
we're shamed enough.
I will also like flip this and not say like shame. It's more like we will get into humiliation play for sure, which is
right.
Fun. But yeah. I don't engage personally with any kind of humiliation that has to do with targeted body parts of a female or non-binary person. That said, you know, getting into, you know, fun slut talk, you know, fun dirty talk, piggy talk, doggy, you know, whatever it is, or humiliation of the body in a way of having that person need to do something when they are in bondage that they clearly can't do, you know, because I've restrained them, or, you know, doing things like with different like sensory play that like can go into humiliation. But not necessarily, I don't really, you know, for my personal practice, I don't attack anybody's identity so much.
Yeah.
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 I feel like Carolyn's going through a list of questions that she's going to put in a way that serves the greater good, but is really personal.
No.
As she gets on her kink journey.
No, I'm sure I will be on some sort of kink journey, but I do like hearing other people's kinks makes me feel very vanilla is the term that I'm also see, you know, people are like, oh, are you vanilla? And I'm like, well, that sounds like not fun. Like, I have very fun sex, but do you have to be kinky to be like, I don't know.
Okay, first of all, you're strawberry. Look at your hair.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I don't think that you need to be kinky to have good sex for the rest of your life. I mean, it's really, but I wouldn't know that either. So being on the side, so we don't know about each other. That's right. I want to say too that some people can get into kinky, you know, and I don't know. We were talking just now about like humiliation, how people can go into deep parts of humiliation. There are people who also work through trauma with kink, right? And like, this is another thing of like how I see kink can be extremely queer in like that if you have something that you are deeply like turned on by that is shameful or has come from trauma, you can address it with somebody and actually, you know, dig in hard and go in there and then in ways that are responsible of being able to like set up your own rituals, you can actually get in there and start to like jiggle apart, you know, the stuff that was concrete, you know, that seemed to have laid foundations to some of the stuff that that causes shame. And we talk about this in terms of like, there are some people who go into these kinds of kinks shame with where it's repetitive. And they just seem like they're just going, like they're going in a fugue where they're not really getting out of it. Like they're just going through the same session, going through the same foot fetish, whatever it is over and over again, they're not like able to reconnect or connect with the person out of it. And they're still wallowing in shame. And then there's the person where, or no, there's the practice where you can actually dig in deep, but harnessing your own agency. And then also your own, not only over the fact that you're going into this type of scenario, but that you get to understand its outcomes, change the outcome, as well as then integrate and talk to, you know, talk to your therapist about it, talk to your lovers about it, talk to you, have community participate possibly, and be able to kind of like, unearth a lot of the shit that was stuck.
Right. Is porn a good, bad, or it depends place to look for kink or like to get into kink, or if you're like curious about a kink, like is it a bad idea to look at porn? Like, is porn doing it right? What porn's doing a good job? What porn's not? What's your best bet?
Sure. Definitely look up at Aorta. Aorta Films, you know, produced right here in Brooklyn. All queer, phenomenal production team. And who else would I recommend? I mean, I think Erica Lust has some good stuff up there. Pink Box. But yeah, look up, you know, obviously look up porn that's being done by your people, by the people that that you identify with. Don't just, you know,
do not go to Pornhub.
Don't just go right
and pick a keyword.
Exactly. Because then there is digital trauma too, right? Like stuff that we've seen in younger where we're like, oh, I can't get that out of my Rolodex. How do I get that from, how do I tear that out of my, that like, you know?
How do you?
Even if you do happen to find something you might like on Pornhub, you can't not guarantee that you won't see something triggering on the sidebar on the suggested video.
It's terrible. Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's really, I think it can be really damaging, that those pop-up stuff.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Is there anything that we didn't ask that we should have? I know it's like a huge discussion, but there's so many different facets to it. I'm like, I don't know. What didn't we talk about?
We didn't talk about kink at Pride because We're done with that argument. Pride starts tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. That was from last year or the past few years, right? That they didn't want kink at Pride. It's just so like,
I feel like it's only gotten kinkier in a reaction to that. No?
It's like saying that sex workers shouldn't be at Pride or kink and kink shouldn't be at Pride is ridiculous. You know?
I mean,
these are the communities that brought gay marriage into where it is and brought gay equality to where it is. It's because they always had to be out. Right. So, it's not a,
and I think that the kink that's at Pride, it's like, it's very passive. It, you know, it's just people wearing like a gimp mask. Like, what's that going to do? Like, you know, it's not like anybody's doing a human centipede, you know, past Stonewall. It's,
that's a light bulb. Image.
Until this year,
rainbow colors.
Oh my god!
Cecilia and I are looking for a third for a human centipede.
Dyke March.
Just kidding. Okay. anything that is worth mentioning, or any words of wisdom to leave with our listeners who are interested in either beginning or expanding their journey into kink?
Journey into kink. I don't think so. I think I said go find your, you know, find community, find classes, kink out. Also the organization that I work with, or it's not an org, it's actually a collective. It's just a bunch of friends. We get together, we put on events. Right now we're doing things at Mocha in LA, but if you're in New York City, there's always fantastic stuff happening in New York City all over for kinks. So just go find your people and, people that you trust.
What if you're not in a major city? I imagine it can be maybe a little bit more challenging to find
digital
community.
Workshops. Maybe.
Yeah. There's a whole world online that you can. Yeah. And we're all on Zoom now. So, but that said, even if you're not in a major city, there's definitely ways like sites that you can find people who are kinky that meet up, you know, all over the country for what they call munches. So it's totally fun.
Two quick questions. One, is the furry community considered part of the kink community, or is that its own beast? No pun intended.
I think the furry furry community is its own. Is its own.
Its own whole thing.
Yeah,
okay.
It's its own whole thing. Great. I have not seen furries in the queer leather, in the leather spaces.
Good. So I'll leave my mascot costume at home. Great. Just kidding. I'm not a furry. Don't start the rumor.
One final question for you. What part of straight culture would you like to appropriate? And that could be anything.
Doesn't have to do with kink.
These people think they have a hold on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this because we've appropriated so much so well, right? But and because we've always been in those spaces. However, I have been thinking lately whenever I go for sushi and I'm sitting at the sushi bar, I'm like, why aren't there like hot women serving me, or hot, you know, sexy binaries, or even a cute, you know, flamboyant gay boy cutting up the sushi for me and serving me this delicious, edible mouthful of, you know, delight, because I think that would just make it so much hotter than like what's going on right now.
So disgruntled,
like,
cis man.
We definitely need like a dyke sushi bar.
Oh my god.
Like hooter, like queer hooters for sushi.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going on Shark Tank next week, so pitch it. No.
Please do.
That would be the best episode of Shark Tank. I've never watched it, but I think that would be it.
Yep.
All right.
Well, thank you for the idea.
Yes. Great. And where can people follow you? And is there anything, I know you've mentioned a lot of different things that you have going on, but anything else that you want to plug that's coming up?
Okay. So International Horse Day has just happened. So, but Kink Out events will continue to work with Mocha in LA to, you know, bring artists and activists together for continuing conversations about intersectional queer kink. and sex work. So yeah, just keep an eye on kinkoutevents.com. You can also follow me at on Instagram at yinq13. And I'm always, yeah, just littering the internet with the stuff I'm doing.
Please.
Thank you so much for diking out with us. And our listeners, you know, you can follow us at Diking Out on social media. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
And I'm at Melody Kamali.
Remember to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/dikingout. Thank you all for listening this week.
See you next Tuesday.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.